Hello, and welcome once again to Film Club. My name is Jeff Yance. I'm the program director at the Loft Cinema. And as always, we have with us Heather Lares, occasional filmmaker.
Hello.
And Rusty Belay Stevenson, multimedia artist.
Hi.
So today we're going to do something a little different than we have done in previous podcasts. We're going to talk a little bit about ourselves and let the listeners know who we are and why we love film and how we came to love film and how we ended up in this hot room talking about film.
Yeah, and with the jobs we have even.
And with our current jobs and how we've evolved from childhood obsessions with film to current jobs dealing with film. And so I think let's start with Heather, if you don't mind, Heather.
Okay.
Yeah, so Heather, just get us talk a little bit. I think we all are from the same generation, and I think we all agree that we kind of became obsessed with film as children, young people, in a similar way. Because you kind of talk a little bit about your early experiences with film.
Yeah, I think from an early age, I read a lot of books, and that was something that I think led into my love for movies. But probably from the age of 9 till 14 or 15, I spent a lot of time by myself. And so I was left with my imagination a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of my love for movies is I love disaster genres.
Yes.
And it's one of my favorite movie genres. Even if it's a cheesy, horribly done movie, I will still watch it and probably like it, aka San Andreas. But I, as a kid, like, just used to come up with scenarios, and I'm in my head, like, I'd be in my room. If there was a disaster, what would I do? And I would even have this old suitcase that was my grandma's. I still have the suitcase. It's a blue suitcase. And I would pack it with stuff that I thought I would need.
Oh,
and then
yes.
I would have, like, imaginary people, like, people who are really in my life, but pretend story-wise in what their jobs would be when the disaster would happen.
Sure.
You know, so it was sort of like me being left to my own devices and telling my own stories. You know, of course, I mean, I was a typical, I played with my Barbies and I made them take epic treks across the country. And, you know, I just love storytelling, and it didn't hit me till later on when my dad actually would take us to a lot of movies as a kid. We would either rent them. Mm-hmm. We talked about, you know, being at the video store, mom and pop video store, not just a Blockbuster.
Right.
And, you know, picking between Beta and VHS, you know, that kind of thing. And that's what we spent, like the advent of the VCR at your house. We spent a lot of time on the weekend watching, you know, VHS tapes and going to the movies. I remember just thinking, like, how powerful it was to be able to make someone laugh or cry or, you know, and I think it's to a certain point I was like, oh, I want to be an actor. And then slowly but surely I realized I don't want to be an actor. I want to be the one who makes the story.
Right.
And is behind the camera giving you the story. And probably from a very young age that I decided, you know, I think 14 maybe, I decided, yeah, I want to be a director. And, you know, we had one of those English classes where they said research a career, and I researched, you know, directing and stuff like that. So I just loved movies, you know, from a very young age. And I even had a list where I would write down the movies I wanted to see. You know, I'd look in the magazines would say, like, you know, these are the movies coming out this summer or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'd write the list down, I have that list somewhere, of all the movies, and I'd check mark them off when I'd watch them, and I'd put like stars if I liked them.
Perfect.
And, you know, so it was just something that made me who I am. It's not, I wouldn't be who I am without all of the movies that I've watched and my love for them.
So. Well, interesting, you mentioned the VHS renting, because I think we're all of the generation where we're sort of the VCR babies and also cable babies. So I think
absolutely.
We grew up in the era, I think we can probably all remember a time before there was cable.
Yes.
Yeah.
Four channels or three channels.
Exactly. Yeah. All network stuff. And maybe even before VCRs were readily available.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that just, I just, from my childhood, that blew it open when I realized you could just watch the same movie over and over and over again. And it was great. Cable, we talked about HBO, seeing the same kind of films over and over, Cinemax, Heather, you said you met, you, was it Turner Classics?
Yeah, when they first launched Turner Classic Movies and they played Gone with the Wind, yeah. I was blown away. I just didn't, I mean, at the time I didn't quite get the politics of the movie, but I was just so amazed that they could create such a movie and it be such a timepiece of that, you know, Civil War and the South and all of that stuff. And just the storyline, you know, the love story, all that stuff. I was so stunned by the movie, and Turner Classics was what got me hooked.
Yeah. And I saw Beastmaster 3,000 times on HBO because it was always on, and that by default almost became one of my favorite movies growing up.
Sure.
Yeah. We all saw Beastmaster a lot, I think.
Yeah. We talked about how they don't really, I mean, they kind of do this, but we have so many channels now it gets foggy. But you know, you would have the late night Saturday night movie, you know, after 11 o'clock they'd play some movie, and you know, if I was good, my grandma would let me stay up and watch it. Or on Saturday afternoons after cartoons, they would start playing, you know, a movie on, you know, your local Fox affiliate or whatever. So I think that kind of played in a lot to what generations before didn't have. Those, you had to leave your house to watch a movie.
Yes, and had more of an impact a little bit, because you had to actually, it was an actual experience.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And yeah, I am very much like Heather in that I loved storytelling early on. Storytelling is what really motivated me through the very first parts of my life. I never considered making movies until I got older and into college, or making anything, film or anything like that. But I was certainly obsessed with a lot of things. Like you say, when VHS first came out, there were movies that I rented over and over and over again. We'd get 3-day rentals and I'd watch it 4 or 5 times in those 3 days. The Natural is one that comes to mind. We also had a theater in town. I grew up in Indiana, in Kokomo, Indiana, north of Indianapolis. And we had a theater in town. Tuesdays was dollar nights, so I would go on Tuesday nights. My parents would drop me off when I was 10, and I would go in and watch whatever there was for a dollar. And it meant I saw a lot of movies. I saw Crocodile Dundee 4 or 5 times at the theater.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I also saw Peggy Sue Got Married 4 or 5 times at the theater. And that one is one that really has stuck with me. Just in the way Nick Cage portrayed that character and the way the movie unfolds, there's a lot about that that I think still influences me. And Ghostbusters is another one that I saw really a lot of times that summer it came out.
Right.
Probably 5 or 6 times at the theater, which my friends all thought was kind of weird, that anybody would go to see a movie. My parents certainly did.
Oh,
they never understood why you would go see a movie multiple times like that.
Well, I think that's what separates us from the rest, is we will watch a movie multiple times if we really love it or enjoyed it. Not everybody does that. You think they do, but they don't.
Not to the extent that we do. Even as an adult, I have those movies, but...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I will get stuck on a film and just go off on it.
Yeah.
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 Well, my childhood experience with film is, I think, similar to both of yours. I was left alone with my imagination quite a bit. And I was lucky enough. This is kind of a weird story, but I grew up in a very small town, population 100. I'm not sure it's even technically considered a town, just a place with some houses in it. And the big city to us was, you know, another small town that was about 30 miles away. For those of you who are familiar with Arizona, it was Wilcox, Arizona. And Wilcox had a local neighborhood movie theater, and my parents would take me there, drop me off on the weekend, because they did, which, you know, again, I think doing that with a kid today is probably not something that's on a lot of parents' radar, where you just drop your kid off at a theater when they're 8 years old and just let them hang out there all day. But this theater was great. They would do double features of things. They weren't always current films, because it was kind of a low-rent theater. It was almost like a drive-in, but it was indoors. So they would do James Bond double features and horror movies and basically the B movies. And I was there so often that the owners of the theater started asking me every week, well, what movie do you want to see next week? And I just was so taken with that idea that I could actually basically program that theater.
It was crazy.
And I started early, and it was crazy. And they would do it. I'd say, I want to see, you know, Herbie Goes Bananas, and it would show up the next week.
Who wouldn't want to see
Who wouldn't?
I loved Herbie.
Yeah, but it's very indelible. This theater was really great. They had a shower curtain separating the lobby from the auditorium, and it was a mom-and-pop movie theater, so it was literally just the husband and wife running this place. And it really kind of got me obsessed not only with movies, but with that, with the idea of exhibition of films and kind of the power of that and how important it was to be in a theater watching something and feeling like you were part of the process was really great. You know, getting to pick the films. And then stacks and stacks of VHS tapes. That's when I wasn't doing that. My parents would get me tapes, whatever I wanted. I had this amazing triple feature once where I remember I rented, for some reason, The Exorcist, Benji, and The French Lieutenant's Woman.
Wow.
And I was 8 years old.
That's quite the variety.
Because I would watch anything.
You mean Benji buffered in between? Like,
I would watch anything. And, you know, Benji, you can understand. I don't know why an 8-year-old boy would want to watch French Lieutenant's Woman with Meryl Streep. But it was a movie.
Yeah.
Oh my God,
and I was into it. So, yeah. And I also kept rating system. I had a whole filing system where I would have index cards, write the name of the film, my rating, my synopsis. And then where I went the extra mile, on the flip side of the card, I would write what happened after the movie ended. So I would essentially write a sequel to every film
that's
I watched.
Wow.
Because I wasn't ever satisfied. It's like, that's not enough.
Oh, that's awesome.
So Benji finds its owners. Well, so what? But now what happens? And I had to know more. I still have that box. It's really kind of bizarre. Some of the actual sequel ideas I came up with really happened.
Oh, nice.
Which is great.
Turned into real sequels.
Yeah. Real-ish. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think basically it's that, you know, being a child left alone a lot, and you sort of use film as a friend almost. Mm. And I became very comfortable with movies. Yeah. And that's why I returned to the same movies over and over again. Like, I loved Bill Murray. He felt like a friend to me in Meatballs and Stripes. And
loved Meatballs.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was a friend.
Yeah. Like... And it sounds sad. It's not really sad, because I'd watch movies with my friends too, but the actual characters in the movies became part of my actual world, my inner world. Which has continued today, I think.
I totally identify with that. Like I said, the Nick Cage character, Charlie, in Peggy Sue Got Married was a character that I really identified with, and I really took his character to heart. It was something I thought about quite a bit, almost like you're saying, like a friend.
Yeah.
And certainly the Bill Murray character in Ghostbusters too.
Right.
His acerbic wit was something that I really, really liked, and yes, I would borrow from that quite a bit.
Yep.
Chevy Chase and Fletch too, I remember being
Fletch,
something that I really identified, not with that character, but I liked the way he delivered his lines. His timing was really good back then, Chevy Chase. And so I would try to borrow that timing a lot. Robin Williams too. Good Morning Vietnam was pretty influential for me.
Right. Yeah. And I think it also has to do with how much supervision your parents decided to place upon you. I think we all grew up in that era, you know, when parents were busy. They had other stuff going on. At least, you know, speaking, you know, I grew up in mostly a single parent household. My mom was very busy. She was working. She didn't have time to supervise everything I was doing. I begged her to take me to that theater in Wilcox to see Alien, even though I was way too young. But it didn't matter. They didn't really, you know, care if you saw an R-rated film. I spent the entire film in the bathroom because I was terrified.
Because you were scared.
I was too scared to go back in.
It's a scary movie.
Yeah.
But I had to see it.
Freaks me out now.
I had to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and my mom and I had a good laugh about it later. And we actually watched it together again when I was older, which was kind of a nice coming full circle moment. But I think there was that kind of magic time in that era when you were sort of left to your own devices, maybe a little more than kids are today.
Oh, much more. I mean, I remember my mom dropping me off at like 9 or 10 to watch Three Amigos with my friend. And it was the first movie that I ever got to watch on my own.
Uh-huh.
And it was at a very small movie theater off of Campbell that doesn't exist anymore. But yeah, it was, you know, she didn't really think twice about it. You know,
no.
I knew the rules. I knew what to do if there was something wrong. And, you know, and that happened a lot then. You know, I think it's much less common nowadays. But I also think that fostered our love for movies. So, you know, it's not, you know,
not a bad thing.
Yeah. And I mean, I grew up in very similar. My mom was a single mom to a certain degree. The parents are divorced. I saw my dad on the weekends, but so, you know, she had a job or she had other things going on. And me and my sisters were left to our own devices. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You know, I think that led to a lot of the movie stuff that I have going on.
Mm-hmm.
My parents were together, but they were certainly very busy and dropped us off at the mall, at the theater a lot. I mean, a lot. I saw a ton of movies by myself as a kid. I still like going to movies by myself, I would point out, too.
Yes, I do.
I almost prefer that experience.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. And looking back, I see a lot of families going to movies together today, which is great. But looking back, I don't really recall, certainly my mother wanting to see children's films. She didn't want to go with me to see Benji.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was an adult. She wanted to see adult films.
Yeah.
But I feel like now it's a little bit different because I think parents are taking a little more active role in seeing what their kids are watching.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's
I would also... Oh,
yeah.
Also, I mean, just... I think that they're making children's films that appeal to adults now. Finding Nemo is a great film.
Yeah.
It's easy for me to watch.
Yeah. Kids' films are a little more mature now.
Yeah.
Well, it's like they even have two levels of the story. There's the adult level,
right.
And then there's the kid level.
Right.
And they do that really well. Yeah, a lot of Pixar does it brilliantly.
So now, as we moved out of childhood and went into our college years, so did you go to school for film? Heather?
I did. I went to the U of A media arts degree. I got a BFA. So I had a lot of production. That's what you do with a BFA. But I was not, you know, a lot of my friends in college had VCRs and those big, very on-the-shoulder cameras, VHS cameras that they could play and make their own movies. I didn't have that as a kid. So my real hands-on making movies did not happen till I got to college. So I was kind of like a little bit behind compared to some of the other kids. But once I, you know, got in there, I was, you know, yay, I can do something tangible. I can not just sit and appreciate movies. But I can make them. And granted, the beginning movies are always bad, but they were fun. Yeah. And they made, I mean, in everything I ever did, whether it was from some cheesy, you know, first beginning, literally the first video class I had was on VHS cameras. Horrible, but it taught me something every time, you know, and that's where, you know, where I really started for production for me. And I enjoyed it. You know, it was hard work. It was definitely hard work. And I think the only thing that I missed that I ended up doing after college was more critical studies, more, you know, you don't have time. The funny thing about film school is you end up not having time to watch movies.
Mm-hmm.
Your later years, you know, your junior, senior year, because you're so busy making them. And so I think you lose a little bit in that. But later on, you know, my 20s, I took the time to watch some more movies. But that's where my college education came from and my basis, basically, for my film studies.
Well, so you went to the University of Arizona.
I did.
As did I.
And you were one of the TAs in... one of my classes. You were not my TA, but you were one of the TAs.
Oh, really?
You were.
Yes.
In Peter Lehman's class.
That's correct.
Yeah.
I was a TA. Yeah. Yeah. And so I originally went to school to get a BFA. I thought I wanted to be a filmmaker. And then I realized that that was not for me and that I was really much more interested in film theory and history and criticism. And But I spent 2 years making films and that it fostered in me this appreciation of how hard it is to make a film. And that's why I'm always very careful about completely dissing a film that actually gets made and completed, because that's hard to do.
Yeah.
Even if it's not a good film, even if you don't like it, somebody made it. Mm-hmm. And that's not an easy task. So I feel like that was very helpful to me to see what it was like to make a film, mm-hmm. to be more empathetic about what it takes to be a filmmaker. And then I went and I got my master's in film studies, became a TA.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that was really where my passion was, like understanding film, not necessarily making it, but appreciating it for sure.
Mm. Yeah. I realized that after I graduated from college that I did some freelance. So I would crew on people's, you know, I shot a few short films and I love doing all of that. Cinematography is probably my second favorite thing. But I also realized I could not be on a set every day because mm-hmm. it's just constant hard work. Not that I'm afraid of hard work, but I prefer the hard work in the editing room. Editing's my specialty and what I enjoy doing. So it's, I, you know, filmmaking is not an easy job. It's hard to get work. And once you get it, it's hard to do. So you definitely learn to appreciate it.
Yeah. You have to see yourself being able to do nothing else in life, I think, to be a good filmmaker. That has to be the one thing you can do.
Yeah.
Because you have to be so driven.
Agreed.
Yeah. How about you, Rusty?
Well, so I originally went to Indiana University at Kokomo, Indiana. And then I transferred to the U of A. I was studying literature, American literature, because I love storytelling. And then at the U of A, I took a themes in literature and film class. And that kind of changed my whole perspective on life almost. You know, it really changed. I was always somebody who was very fascinated with film. I remember seeing David Lynch's Twin Peaks Fire Walk with Me on video and immediately rewatching it because I was so fascinated with the way that story was told.
Right.
I really wanted to break down the hidden secrets within it. It's full of secrets, much like Laura.
Yes.
And it really got me. But then I took a themes in literature and film class, and we critically studied Psycho. I watched Taxi Driver for the first time. There were a number of films that I saw for a first time or started thinking about critically. And I really, by the end of that class, I knew that I had profoundly changed. I considered that a breaking point with my education. I didn't finish my degree in literature. It really kind of rocked me in a lot of ways. There were a lot of other mitigating factors, but certainly seeing that and thinking about film in that way had me questioning what I was doing. And I ended up working at a place in Tucson very close to the Loft. It was called Pink Motel. It was a video store and coffee shop. And I worked at the coffee shop side. But my friends on the video side, they were all into making films. I had a friend who, in fact, took his money for college and made a film instead of going to school.
Yeah.
And I had another friend who was in high school who was making little movies on his own, little vignette movies, little 5 minute, 7 minute things. And so we started staying up all night and making things, making these really off the wall things, you know, but we had so much fun doing it. And we'd watch our 4 minute piece on VHS in the morning, you know, as the sun's coming up, we'd get to watch it. And it really got me thinking about things very differently. I ended up doing an internship at Sound and Fury here in town. I started becoming fascinated with documentaries. Documentary film was something I, at the time in the mid 90s, I could see that it was going to bust out in 10 years, that documentaries were going to become far more important. And I still think it hasn't quite reached what I've always considered documentaries would. I see it a little bit. Al Gore's movie where you're, and other movies like it, where you're really pushing a point of view almost. It was something that I knew that could be done and that could be done to kind of manipulate, if you will, points of view. And I thought that was fascinating. I thought that telling those kinds of stories was something that I was interested in doing. And so, you know, it became important to me. I met my wife in 2000. She has her bachelor's in fine arts from the U of A and in media arts. And when we met, they had told her at the place where we were working, they're like, oh, you have to meet Rusty. He's way into documentary film. And at that point, I was really starting to think about, how do I make a documentary? How can I do that? You know? And since then, I've spent 2 years learning how to edit on the Avid system. I now work at Visit Tucson as a graphic designer, but I also am the video editor there. I'm one of two video editors. And so we're making a series of videos right now, and it's something that I love doing. I understand where Heather's point of view is because I love telling a story with editing. Like I have a sense for pacing. I have a sense for storytelling. It's something I've thought about all my life. And so now it's something that I love getting to express in that way. Yeah. And I've made some interesting stuff. My wife and I, like I said, we met and we knew we'd like stuff. So we for our wedding, we had a very small wedding, but then we had a wedding party and we made this really ridiculous wrestling wedding video. It's 20 minutes of this storyline about how that we showed our party before we came out to these theme songs and we were going to act like we were going to wrestle. It was the WWBS, the Wrestling Wedding of Boulay Stevenson. And my best man was my manager and her maid of honor was her manager. And our preacher, our reverend, was the referee. yep. of course. And so, and we got to shoot in a wrestling ring, which was really great. And it's on YouTube. I'm not terribly proud of it, aside from the fact that it was my wedding and we had a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah.
And it's funny. And I've made I produced a music video for the band Sunbones, You're Gonna Die, that is also very fun. And it's almost got this epic kind of quality and feel about it. I'm really proud of the work that we did on it. But it's hard making movies, as has been stated here.
Yes.
Those were some of the hardest days I ever worked, were making that music video. One day in particular, we shot on Pennington Street. We had to close down the street. And we shot in this area where you couldn't walk very easily. It's not meant for you to get down there. It's by the courthouses. But that's where we shot. And so I had to walk this set all day long. I had to have walked 20 miles that day. I had to have walked 20 miles, making sure everybody was in place, making sure everything was getting done the way it needed to. It was one of my hardest days of work ever. I could barely walk the next day, but I loved it. And I love getting to tell stories like that too now in editing and even producing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we're all still sort of, I think we're all doing what we wanted to do as kids.
To a degree.
I think maybe I mentioned this maybe off mic at some point with the two of you, that when I was a kid, I used to record music and carry it around with me on a tape recorder and play it so I could have my own theme music wherever I went.
Which is awesome.
That is
one of the best things ever.
Yes. I was kind of a weird kid. I have not lived that dream yet, because people tend to give you weird looks. But maybe I should like pick that up again. I don't know.
Having your own theme music.
Yeah. And being the program director at the Loft is great, because that's sort of a realization of, I think, a lot of my obsessions as a kid. I get to watch tons of movies. I get to go to film festivals. I get to meet filmmakers and actors. And just that idea of sort of creating, sort of helping to create a mood through film, and seeing if people will like something, and like trying to almost second guess what people's taste is going to be. Trying to give them what they want, but then something that they don't know they want. It's just kind of a fascinating process. The right job for me, for sure.
Well, I think I need to mention that after college, since I wasn't one to go to LA or New York, I wanted to stay in Tucson, so I wanted to find my own film community here. And I got involved with Pan Left Productions, which is a local nonprofit activist video collective. And one of my friends, who is still to this day one of my best friends, got me to do a documentary about the border and the militarization of the U.S.-Mexico border and how it affects migrants and how it affects indigenous people. And little did I know that that would change my life. Because I stayed connected with Pan Left since then. I'm not really active right now, but I've been, you know, all along this last 15 years hanging out with them, and been on the board of directors, and I've made three more documentaries with them. I made a video about San Manuel copper mine shutting down and how it affected the community. I made one about Brush Woman, which was a beryllium plant on the south side of Tucson, and how Tucson is known for being a Superfund, like the south side is known for being a Superfund site, and how they've poisoned many of the people that lived there, and how Brush Woman was there, and how many of the workers got ill from them with unsafe working conditions. And did a little retrospective on Pan Left, and all of those things changed my life, because I was really more of a narrative person. I didn't know that documentary was going to affect me so much, and that, I mean, I always had this thing in me that felt injustice, but I didn't know what to do with that. And then I found Pan Left, and it made me realize, oh, you can make documentaries to expose the injustice and talk about it. And it was really powerful for me, a powerful thing for me. So those are the projects that I did on my own. And, you know, at the time, I pretty much was a one-woman show, did it all with the help of Jeff. He would always help me with like graphics and music, and he also is my moral support and helps me get those things done.
We should say not Jeff here, but a different Jeff.
Yes, a different Jeff.
There's another Jeff in the world?
There's more than one. But yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at. And I work at the university now, and I manage a group that makes multimedia for faculty and content. It's a good job. I like it. I don't get to be as creative as I used to be, but we all got to pay the bills. And, you know, and for Tucson, it's Tucson, it's hard to stay here and make media of any sort. And I think the three of us have kind of managed to do that in our own ways. And that's pretty awesome because it doesn't happen as frequent as we would like.
Agreed. Yes.
But
yes.
So
totally agree. Yeah. That's great.
But
yeah.
So that leads into my three picks. What my first pick being Harlan County, USA, which is a documentary.
Oh yeah.
Love it.
And I had never seen it. And Jeff Emig, who is with Pan Love Productions, said you need to watch this if you're gonna make documentaries. So I watched it and I was just in awe. And Barbara Koppel directed it. Granted, she peaked, I think, with Harlan County. But she's amazing. If you ever like documentaries, you should watch Harlan County, USA.
Absolutely.
It just captures a town and this union fight in such a way that I was just amazed. And I wanted to do that. And so that's one of the three movies for me. As a kid, strangely enough, one of the other movies is La Bamba. And it's for two reasons. One, because I never saw, people of, you know, part of my family culture, Chicano, Latino culture portrayed on movies. And here you have La Bamba telling the story of this musician who I never knew about. And I was just, one, amazed that that happened. And two, I was bawling by the end.
Yes.
And it was like, I want to make people bawl. Like, I mean, that sounds weird and manipulative, but it's true. Like, as a director, you want to make people feel these emotions or learn this lesson. And that was, I was there. I was sold. Like, oh, I want to make movies and tell stories. And I think a good movie is always when you want to go find out more about it. And I went and looked about Ritchie Valens, and I found about the Big Bopper and Buddy Holly.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, so that was one of the definite films that influenced me. And I would say the last one would be 400 Blows by Francois Truffaut.
Oh, wow.
My favorite genre is French New Wave. And I watched that movie and it made me read every single Truffaut book that ever existed because of the way he tells stories. He is such a master at telling stories, and 400 Blows is such a great movie about a kid.
Yep.
But it's such an adult topic and adult emotions that I just really loved it. It really made me a different filmmaker and a different movie watcher by watching that movie. And I went and read everything about him, and I just appreciated the fact that the French New Wave directors got together with their friends and pooled money and made movies. That inspired me to I have my 8 to 5, 9 to 5 job that pays the bills, but I still need to remember that we can do that. Like, friends can get together and make things. And
that's right.
I always try to remember that, like, okay, let's do this.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like, you know, we're talking about movies, but this is kind of something like celebrating movies in itself.
Right.
So,
and getting together with you guys.
Yeah.
I really love it. It's become one of my favorite things.
We're like the French New Wave.
Wow.
Yes. Oh, Lord.
I just made a leap of logic.
Okay. We'll go with it.
Yeah. What about you, Rusty?
Okay. Well, obviously, like I said, documentaries were really important to me. When I saw Fast, Cheap, and Out of Control, Errol Morris's film, it really, the narrative of it, that you had these different people who were really from different walks of life, but were still dealing with some interesting similarities in their jobs and in their lives, I found that fascinating. I found his storytelling fascinating, and that Errol Morris moves me. Fog of War is one of the most gorgeous films I've ever seen, and it's a documentary, right?
Right.
It's really amazing. His work is really interesting and profound to me, but Fast, Cheap, and Out of Control is one, when I saw it, I was like, that is what I want to do. I want to make that. I want to make things like that. Also, Good Morning Vietnam was a really influential film for me. Robin Williams' comedic stylings were really interesting. That he was a DJ was really interesting to me. And then the storytelling, the character arc in that film was something that, as a young person, I could see that character arc. I could see the way they built it, and I could see the way they made it. They pulled it off, and that Robin Williams goes from this person, you just see his growth as a person and him coming to realize that things have consequences and that you can't do everything on your own. That really spoke to me. I'm sure I could come up with something else, but I'm going to go with something that still influences me to this day, every day, is The Life of Brian. That is really subversive. I love its subversiveness. I love it in a way that it's so profound to me that you could tell this alternate Jesus story, right? And make it funny. And the timing in it's so brilliant. John Cleese is so great in it. And just again, that's all about timing to me, Life of Brian, that they make this really great movie that's so subversive and has such great comedic timing throughout. He's having a go at the birds now. You know, there's so much about it that I just love that film. And so I'll say Life of Brian is something that I know has affected me. And I probably think about it on a regular basis.
Yeah. And a little blasphemy never hurts.
Oh, yeah.
No. Yeah, that's good. Well, I am always big into the experience of film. And I kind of already gave away one of mine is the going to see Alien and spending it in the bathroom, because that kind of blew my mind that I could be so affected by a film, not even having seen it, but just thinking about it, that I was hiding in a bathroom stall. Because to me, that kind of indicated film is really powerful. It can really make you do things that you don't think you're going to do. And then I ended up loving Alien, of course, when I actually watched it. But in terms of the films that really sort of changed my perspective on film, my parents gave me a VHS copy of Harold and Maude. Again, this is strange because I was really young, maybe 10. And it's, you know, a movie about a suicide-obsessed teenager and a love affair with an 80-year-old woman. But that really, I think, influenced a lot of my sense of humor, because I've seen that movie probably more than any other film. It's so ingrained in my whole life that I know everything about that film.
Wow.
And just kind of the fact that you could juxtapose darkness with lightness, that has really sort of influenced, I think, a lot of what I see in my general life, just my regular non-movie life. And then someone turned me on to Eraserhead at one point. This was probably more when I was in high school. And that blew my mind, because I realized that I loved experimental film. And I hadn't really ever had much experience with it at that point. And it just sort of showed me that there was a whole nother kind of filmmaking that was completely separate. It wasn't concerned with narrative. It wasn't concerned with telling a story. It just wanted to make you feel something. And I did. And amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Probably unlike any other film I've ever seen. Closest to capturing a nightmare on film, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then just... at some point I discovered John Waters, which was, I realized, oh my gosh, this is exactly my sense of humor. And it was just kind of a great sort of awakening moment where I thought, okay, well, so you can actually follow your bliss and you can do exactly what you want. You don't have to worry about offending people. You can just do anything. Like, anything's possible. The first film I saw was Multiple Maniacs. I don't know if you've seen that, but this is one of the very early John Waters, one of the first Divine films, where Divine is, the film ends with Divine being assaulted by a giant lobster.
Okay. Maybe I need to see that.
And evidently.
And there's a lot of blasphemous things that go on in a Catholic church in the film. And it's just really crazy. And this was apparently filmed right after the Manson murders happened, but before Charles Manson was caught. And so in the film, John Waters thought it would be funny to have Divine confess to the murders.
Oh my God.
And no one knew who Divine was at that point. So they thought this was like a documentary and this was a real person confessing to these crimes. And looking back, you think that was really bold and insane that you would do that. So that was just really eye-opening to me.
Wow.
I would say so.
That you could be that free in a film. And I just love John Waters. I just think he's hilarious. Great. He's great. So,
Well, I want to ask Heather, you bringing up the fact that Harold and Maude is the film you've seen the most. Heather, what movie have you seen the most? I'll say mine first and then you say yours. So I have, and it's as an adult, I have watched Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, the film by the Coen brothers. I don't know, 150 times at least. A lot I've watched that movie. I will just put it on just because there are so many parts about it that I love, but once they get to the part where he sings Man of Constant Sorrow, George Clooney's face in that is pretty great.
Yeah.
And so I've watched that movie a lot. I think it's gorgeous. I think it's probably underrated as far as Coen Brother films go, but... So what do you got, Heather? I just shared mine.
Oh, jeez. I don't know if I want to share. I probably... Oh, God. I'm going to have
I love that it's causing you so much torment.
She's embarrassed. Don't be embarrassed.
I'm not embarrassed. Well, I'm minorly embarrassed. Because it fits into my genre of disaster apocalyptic movies would be Armageddon. And it's not great. I know that. Don't say anything. No. But at college, I didn't have cable. And so I would just put VHS tapes on. And Armageddon was one of them. I would say that. That I've probably Armageddon and The Fugitive, because every time it's on TV, I will watch The Fugitive. I will stop and watch it. I have no idea why, but I will. Even if it's midway through, I will still watch The Fugitive. So that redeems me a little bit.
Yeah,
a little.
Well, thank you for opening up, Rusty and Heather.
Oh, and thank you, Jeff. Gosh, that was kind of cool to hear.
Yeah, that was fascinating. Hopefully, people found it interesting. Next week, we're going to be moving away from us towards another filmmaker. We're going to be talking about the films of Spike Lee.
Yes.
The amazing Spike Lee. Yes. So that brings us to rule number 613 of Film Club, which is when it comes to Spike Lee, he's always going to do the right thing. So thanks, Heather. Thanks, Rusty. And we'll see you next time.